Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. Produced by Sharka Creative, that's Shark with a C, not a K. You see the logo on the wall behind me in orange and blue. And I'm John Marino, westchestertalkradio.com, made possible by our good friends over at Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis and Hightower Westchester at Hightower. They manage your wealth to a fiduciary standard. Joined here now on Westchester Talk Radio by County Legislator Mary Jane Shimsky on the Cup of Joe Political Show. Mary Jane Shimsky represents the 12th District, which encompasses the River Towns area of Westchester below 287 along the Hudson River. Also, you got communities like Ardsley, Dobbs Ferry, Hastings, and Irvington included in the district, plus parts of the town of Greenberg, including Edgemont and most of Hartsdale, too. Mary Jane Shimsky, the Democratic majority leader of the county board here in Westchester. Mary Jane, I'd say you have a pretty decisive lead when it comes to Democrats against everybody else.
Definitely. On a 17-member board, we are 16 Democrats and one registered conservative.
Which is Margaret Kunzio, obviously, a little bit up the river from you and the Pleasantville, Mount Pleasant area. Does that lead to everybody always being on the same page when everybody's a Democrat? Or, and I talk about this with public officials, the response I generally get is, no, John, because some people come from Yonkers and some come from Yorktown and Somers, and the issues in these areas are so very different. Wacapuck is not the same as New Rochelle.
Well, they're definitely, you're going to have conflict in politics. And if you have one party in control of everything in an area, those conflicts are going to be within the party as opposed to against two parties.
Right.
On a lot of the basic understandings of what government is and what government should do and all of that, we're actually all pretty close, but as you put it, there are certainly local issues. And when we're in an era where resources are limited, sometimes priorities could skew a little bit different, and that creates a certain amount of diversity of opinion as well.
Is it difficult to keep, let's say, a Wacapuck or a Granite Springs, a more affluent portion of the county, in line or on the same page with a Mount Vernon or, let's say, areas of White Plains or an Ossining or Peekskill? Is that difficult to do?
Not always. They obviously have different priorities. Obviously, there's more concern in the northern part of those northern parts of the county in terms of keeping taxes down, whereas in places where you have demand for a lot of services, they look at that a little bit differently. But I'm really surprised after a certain amount of dialogue, we generally come pretty close in agreement. That's the nice thing about a 17-member board or a 16-member caucus, is it's not so big that you can't have the conversations you need to have.
Is compromise a real key, even intra-party amongst the Democrats, because you have divergent issues? It's not all one size fits all?
I don't know if it's so much compromise as an understanding that we have to accommodate everyone's needs to at least the degree it's physically and logistically possible. If people can look at each other, even though they have different interests, and say, I understand why you need that, so let's see what we can do about it. It creates a completely different kind of conversation, and it's one that generally everybody can leave feeling pretty good about.
Can we make an analogy along the lines of you're in one end of the football field and you're looking at the goalposts at the other end, and you got 11 guys on the field, they all play a different position, and you got to get to the end zone on the other end anyway, so we have to find a way to work together to make sure we all get to the collective goal.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. There is something to that.
Now, here we are right near Election Day. We're at the cusp of November, at the end of October, and lots of early voting going on around the county. You hear different stories about some people had to wait a long time, others who did not have to wait a long time. What have you seen out there about early voting for those going to the polls early? And from what you can tell so far, how has the absentee ballot mail-in ballot system worked?
The early voting has really taken off this time. And I think people were kind of surprised at how many people have chosen to vote early in person.
And that's what I've heard most of all, the surprise as to how many people are out there.
Yeah, I think that a large part of it was tens of thousands of individual household decisions when they started hearing about what was going on with the post office. I think that that was the biggest driver of it. I know, for example, in my household, my husband and I had the conversation because we were planning to vote absentee. We voted absentee. I voted early in the primary, but I believe he voted absentee. But anyway, as we started hearing more and more horror stories about what was going on with the post office, we made the collective decision that we were going to vote early in person. I received one email from a constituent who was going through much the same thought process and asked me for my thoughts on it. But when early voting came last Saturday, it turned out that there were tens of thousands of people who had those conversations and who had come to the same basic decision that they really wanted to vote on the machine. The post office was a problem. The idea that sometimes absentee ballots can get rejected for various technicalities. Once your vote's on the machine, it's on the machine. So I think that's what's been driving the numbers. It's been very heavy down here. We have one of the early voting places right here in Dobbs Ferry. The waits were over 3 hours on Saturday. Sunday, it was more down to an hour and a half or 2 hours, but that's because the Board of Elections, when they saw the lines, added some equipment to make things move faster.
Imagine if they said you can't vote on a Saturday or Sunday, what the weekday wait would be.
Or imagine if we did not have in-person early voting and everybody tried to vote next Tuesday.
Election Day, yep. Mm-hmm. Which leads to the thought that maybe this could be a new model for voting from here on out?
I think so. Last year when we did the early voting, it's the odd-numbered years are generally lower turnout years. And it takes a while for people to get accustomed to a new culture when it comes to how they're going to vote. And there were a lot of people who said, oh, we should just go to all mail. But as I said, there was some basic concerns that came out pretty much close to the last minute. It was basically too late to get at least a large number of new early voting sites. So they added equipment, they expanded the hours. And those have helped in terms of keeping the line shorter. But this is something that might last because people now know they don't have to worry about planning their lives around that Tuesday.
Right. Around one day where you have work and kids in school and lots of other responsibilities too. Mm-hmm. How do we fix, if you have any thoughts on, how do we fix the system that we see now and you alluded to where some people don't get their ballots? Me, for example, I got my primary ballot in time, got it out in the mail, waiting for my general election day ballot. And at this point, even if it came later on today when I go get the mail, it's a little too late, I think, to get it in, to trust it in my mind. So I'm going to be there 6 a.m. on election day to cast my vote. Maybe because this is so new, we still have kinks to work out in this system yet?
Well, Certainly, the number of absentee ballots that were requested has greatly eclipsed anything that anyone who ran elections in New York State thought possible. The interesting thing is a lot of them probably will not be returned now because a lot of those people did vote early. But there's a lot that experience and getting an idea of what you can expect in terms of turnout or demand when gives you an opportunity to get the right equipment and the right personnel in place. Two of the problems that we did have, obviously people worried about the ballots getting in. That's out of our control. That was the post office. The second thing is the state has passed legislation that now allows voters to cure certain defects with their absentee ballot. So the Board of Elections is supposed to get back to you and tell you you're missing a signature or you're missing this or you're missing that. And then you have an opportunity to go to the Board of Elections and fix that. And I think the good news about that is it just doesn't protect the vote this time. But I think it serves an educational function that now people may realize, oh, I was doing it wrong. I'll have to do, now I know what to do next time. So hopefully we'll end up with better compliance in subsequent years because of it.
And maybe the real bottom line out of all of this is now we know we have a variety of ways to vote, which we had before, but in our collective minds, it was all election day and that's it. Now we know we can vote early. We know we can vote by mail. We know we can show up to a designated polling place 7 to 10 days in advance of the election and get it done.
Right. Well, the interesting thing with the absentees is at this point, the reason why we have something that's pretty much a no excuse absentee is because of the pandemic. I think there is a great deal of interest in that kind of reform up in Albany at this point, but there people have opined that it will take a amendment to the New York State Constitution, which means we may well end up going back to a couple years of the old you need to provide an excuse style of absentee voting before we can go back to something approaching no excuses again.
With the pandemic in mind, the curve being flattened in Westchester and schools and businesses being reopened, do you see the reopening moving in the right direction? Are we keeping that curve as flat as possible, knowing that we don't have a cure yet and we don't know a lot about this virus yet still?
Yeah. Well, I think Westchester County and just about all of New York State is doing a really good job. They're really going out there with the testing, the contact tracing. And of course, we have things like a mask mandate. We really try to focus in on the social distancing norms. I am not so worried about us in New York, but since as a practical matter, we are not going to be able to keep people from other states from coming into New York, that is where we can end up having really serious problems.
And we do have this mandate about if somebody comes here from a so-called designated state where the COVID rate is high right now that they have to quarantine for 14 days. How do we get people to do that? How do we make sure that we're trying to do this for even the sake of the person who's come here, obviously, and their health too. How do we make sure that people who are coming here from a Texas, a Florida, and Arizona comply mm-hmm. with that?
Well, from what I understand, there's a lot more contact from the health department now to engage people and at least try on some level to ensure more compliance. In early March, my daughter was in the middle of a semester abroad when her program required her to come back home, and she was supposed to quarantine for 2 weeks. No one checked in with us from anywhere. We did it, but if we didn't want to, no one would have known the first thing about it. But now there are daily communications with people and questions being asked and so on. It's become more rigorous, which is good, but I don't think that you can completely guarantee. So if you end up with a lot of people from states with higher rates, you can end up having more of a problem. I think we'll still do a better job of containing it than most other places will, but I expect that we are going to have some significant upticks during the winter. And we may end up having, if not a broad general shutdown, we're probably going to have some shutdowns as we go through the winter.
As people come here from those aforementioned states, I guess we have to rely on enforcement because, as in your daughter's example, and obviously you guys, you know, she complied with what she had to do and did what she had to do. We can't rely on that kind of scout's honor, though, overall.
Oh, absolutely, especially since in some of these states, defiance of these things is the norm. And as we know, we walk around the streets and everything. Mask wearing compliance is pretty good in most parts of the county, but it's not 100%.
Right. And I do, if I see somebody without a mask or they have a mask down below their nose, I could be in a store with a cashier and say, hey, can you raise that above your nose? Not for me, but for you and everybody around you. And they say, oh yeah, I dropped it like an hour ago and I kind of forgot to put it back up. Matter of fact, in one store, same guy 2 weeks in a row. It happened. So I said, when I see you next week, you'll have your mask up, right? He said, yes, I will. I saw him a few days later and did have the mask up. So that was good. A step in the right direction. Businesses being open, schools being open. Are we moving in the right direction with that? Do you find most businesses complying with the rules and schools making the best of it?
I do. I know when I go shopping in a store, even places where I might be a little concerned because they tend to be busy, everybody's wearing their masks, everybody's trying to keep their distance, and it all seems to be going well. The big question, of course, are restaurants and bars. And that's because inherently, if you're in a place like that, doing those activities, your mask is off a great deal of the time.
Right.
And I know there's a lot that's being done in terms of air filtration and so on. But if we are going to have a problem, those are probably, especially the bars, because people tend to really crowd themselves. That is where the problem can be. And that's going to require a whole lot of vigilance.
I think about my favorite places and you think about it, am I going to stop by here to say hi? And I'll say, you know, if you go to the bar there, they can only fit, if they're going to social distance the right way, three people across the bar. You're going to go six.
Exactly.
I said, at that point, it's not worth it. So
right.
Better safe than sorry, obviously.
Yes. I am hoping that all my favorite restaurants will get heat lamps and fire pits for the winter. Right. And I got myself an extra warm winter coat. And that's my fine dining plan.
And I think for this area, the Hudson Valley, I mean, what could be better than sitting outside on a nice, chilly fall evening or early, cold, somewhat cold winter's evening and enjoying? To me, that's what life is about. You know, I love doing things like that. And if we are going to allow bars and restaurants to be open, most will invest the money to make sure they can stay open and heat properly. And I think it's a great way to enjoy the season and enjoy the area that we're in. Schools, obviously, the county executive George Latimer announcing within the past few days that money from the Federal CARES Act is going to be devoted to remote learning. What does this mean for the county?
I think it's an excellent thing because a number of our school districts are not the affluent school districts we think of when we think of Westchester schools. And a lot of those children don't have good internet access or even have internet access at all at home. And we want to make sure that they don't get behind. So having facilities and having equipment for them to be able to keep up with their schoolwork is absolutely critical.
And do you think there's a way that we could find money from the state education department, for example, and have it trickle down locally to make sure that every child is equipped the right way with what they need, with the iPad they need or the laptop, et cetera, to be able to learn the right way, regardless if that child happens to live in Mount Vernon or happens to live in Somers.
That is an excellent principle. The state government is somebody else's concern. For those who don't remember, even before we had the COVID settle in our state, we were trying to figure out how to deal with a big budget shortfall on the state level. And obviously the increased needs during the pandemic, and which include public health needs and certainly educational needs, balanced against a lot of reduced revenues. This is not a good budgetary time for anyone.
That Mary Jane Shimsky, the Democratic Majority Leader, Westchester County Board of District 12, the River Towns area, and also most of the town of Greenburg, a good portion including Edgemont and a large swath of Hartsdale too. Mary Jane Shimsky, as we head now to the back end of 2020, the final months of this year, social justice, police reform, a big issue throughout most of 2020. Police reform, a local issue now where the governor mandates that every locality in the state give him a plan of police reform on his desk by April of 2021. From a countywide perspective, how can Westchester pitch in?
Well, Westchester trains most of the police officers who are on the street in Westchester County. And even before the governor's mandate came down, the county executive already formed a task force to look at training practices at the police academy. Because the better trained police officers are before they go on the street, the more likely you are to get the kind of response everybody wants.
Do we have to rethink how maybe we retrain cops or who we, I hate to use the word allow, but who we select to become police officers or law enforcement officers?
As a personal opinion, absolutely. There was, unfortunately, a very heavily redacted 2006 report from the FBI. This was done during George W. Bush's administration, not exactly a wild-eyed radical. That sounded the alarm about white supremacists trying to infiltrate police departments. And if that was going on in the early 2000s,
15 years ago,
you could conceivably be seeing a critical mass of people in certain police departments. And you want to make sure that the good cops are not tarnished by what can only be called. I mean, I don't think anyone who saw that George Floyd film had any doubt about what it was they were seeing. And the easiest way to protect people is to make sure that you've got people with the right
attitude.
The right attitude, who have the right sense of the common good at heart, to come into the job. You want police officers to be able to do their jobs, but you need to make sure you're starting from a good ethical baseline. Mm-hmm. And then you want to make sure they have the tools, whether it's de-escalation training, because we just had a shooting in Philadelphia this week, and these happen all the time where someone suffering a mental illness episode ends up getting shot to death while there's a wellness check going on. You should not, someone who gets a welfare check right. should not die at the end of it.
Right. And, like we saw in Rochester and Colorado too.
And there was one, Mr. Chamberlain in White Plains.
In White Plains,
I believe
a
few years back. That was 2011, 2012. And a lot of that can be dealt with. There's all kinds of police de-escalation training out there. There's something called the San Jose method, which has had a lot of good results. These are the kinds of things you need to make sure that police officers have in their quote unquote, in their mental arsenals. The job isn't just guns.
And we all agree it is a tough job, and yet maybe there Absolutely. Are ways to find different ways to execute the job of being a law enforcement officer in different ways to make sure that incidents
Absolutely.
Like these continue to happen.
And one of the frustrating things is so much of our political discourse has become impossible at this point, because as soon as you say one thing, that just creates a whole storm on the other side, or vice right. versa. And I was in correspondence with one of my local, with a constituent who is a New York City police officer recently. And I said, there are difficult conversations to be had on both sides, but we need to find a way in this country where we can sit down and we can have those conversations.
Now, infrastructure, I know that's a key issue to you and to the county board. And like you've pointed out, budgetarily right now, we don't have what we usually have to work with. How do we make sure the infrastructure of the county, and working in tandem with surrounding areas like a Putnam, a Dutchess, a Rockland County, a Fairfield County, across the river in New Jersey, all part of the whole tri-state area infrastructure, how do we handle this issue as best as possible when we see the conditions of some of our roads and bridges mm-hmm. and local streets too?
Right. Well, the county's jurisdiction is over generally roads that connect one community to another. For example, Ardsley Road, Warburton Avenue in my area. There are several roads that go across Yorktown into Peekskill and then further east into Somers.
Dumps Ferry down into Yonkers and Scarsdale, mm-hmm. roads like that, streets like
and,
that.
And we own over 120 bridges, some of which are not on county roads, but communities came to us with a need to connect neighborhoods or connect communities. Mm-hmm. And they... the whole project required more resources than they could bring to bear. So we would sometimes take on those projects. The good news about the way the economy is now is that interest rates are very, very low. So if you want to do a lot of capital work, this is the time to do it, because you're never going to see interest rates this low again.
Doesn't it seem like infrastructure gets put on the back burner? People talk about it. And they say, we're going to rebuild. And then five years later, didn't even like bang a nail in yet.
Oh, my goodness, John. There are elected officials, and they exist in both parties, who when it's time to cut back on expenses, the first thing they do is they look to cut the capital budget. But all you do then is make the problems get worse, which means when you absolutely have to fix them, it's going to be an awful lot more expensive. You have to keep up on this. The good news is there's some efforts at innovation out there. I've been on conference calls recently with a coalition of groups that are trying to put together a national infrastructure bank that will make it easier to find capital at favorable terms to make sure that our roads, our bridges, wastewater treatment plants, power grid, and so on are kept in better repair, and that we can actually innovate high-speed rail, get a better grip on the quality of our water delivery infrastructure, which is a huge problem everywhere. You know, people think of it's a big problem in a lot of, in like Newark, for example. But I remember when my kids were growing up, one of our neighbors had her children tested for lead, and it turned out they had a lead pipe problem in the yard of their house. This is an issue that can affect anybody, and it will take vast sums of money to completely solve the problem, which is why new ideas like an infrastructure bank, along with consistent capital investment, is going to have to work in tandem.
We need more capital investment in our storm preparedness in Westchester. It is that time of year. We've had a storm or two already, anticipating another one maybe even today as we speak, from what we hear, are we ready for another storm in this county, or do we need to clean some things up?
Well, we've been having conversations for the last 2 years about the reliability of our electrical service and what can be done to prevent or shorten the duration of the power outages that are becoming way too common and way too long in just about all parts of our county. And in some of our public meetings, Con Ed, which supplies power to probably somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of the county, touted a plan by which they're investing an extra $25 million a year on storm hardening and making necessary repairs and improving the resiliency of their electrical distribution system. Now, when you think about the thousands of miles of utility poles that are around this county, you drive around too, you know, you have some sense. $25 million is not quite a drop in the ocean, but it's almost as bad. We're really going to have to look at undergrounding everything really is not going to work and sometimes causes more problems on the other side than you think, but strategic undergrounding, cabling instead of naked wires, making sure utility poles are in good place, making sure that there are certain kinds of equipment on the poles that will result in fewer outages, kind of analogous to a circuit breaker. There are all kinds of things that can be done, but if you want to distribute them widely throughout the county, I don't see how $25 million does it.
It's like you say, seems like a drop in the bucket. As soon as you said that, I'm thinking, all right, over 10 years, that's it's $250 million, but
yeah,
that
well, they were talking
quick.
About 25 over in 4
one
years.
Year. Yeah, for 1 year. So yeah, quickly through my head, okay, 250 over 10 years if you did that. But that even that goes pretty quick when you think about it. Where does that $25 million go? You could eat that up on a couple of projects if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you put it in a way so that people understand that it's not that simple. It is mighty extensive to make sure from an infrastructure standpoint when it comes to dealing with storms that much has to be done. Is it a case of where we need to kind of ring the bell and wake certain people up that more effort is needed besides money?
I think that corporate culture sometimes focuses on the wrong things. I also think that we are kind of the northern province of a company whose primary focus is elsewhere, New York City. We have to look long, if we want to make sure, especially now that more people are probably going to be working from home as a long-term proposition.
Another infrastructure issue, yeah.
We are going to have to make sure that people unpredictably will end up not being able to do their work for 5 or 6 days or more, unless they sit in the car with the car running, yeah, and their cell phone charging where the cigarette lighter used to be.
From an economic standpoint and a business standpoint, that's not going to work. And we have to figure
Absolutely.
That out now, too.
Absolutely.
Yep. Mary Jane Shimsky, County Legislator, 12th District, the River Towns area, and also a good swath of the town of Greenburg over in Edgemont and most of Harsdale too. Mary Jane Shimsky, good to talk to you again. Thank you for all of your insight, as always, through the years. Much appreciated.
It was great to be here, John. Thank you so much.
Let's do it again, hopefully sometime soon. Let's maybe early in the new year. We'll get together again. You'll have a
Sounds
better read
perfect.
On budgets then. We can talk a little more. Mary Jane Shimsky, thank you. From Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino, and we are made possible by our good friends at Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. White Plains Hospital, our thanks to all of our heroes there for all of their efforts throughout the pandemic, the COVID pandemic of 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon. Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville. Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction. We thank you one and all. We are produced by Sharka Creative, and catch all of our Westchester, Fairfield County, Putnam and Dutchess Talk Radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio.
Powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative.
And made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.